The Ghost Goal Podcast.
The top three teams in the Premier League, all fighting for the title, kept pace with each other this weekend as Liverpool recorded a 3-1 win, Manchester City beat Everton 2-0, and Arsenal managed a historic 6-0 win away from home at West Ham. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 441. Javier, last week was the episode that we allotted, you know, more time than usual to, you know, praising Arsenal and saying how great they are. So you get 2 to 5 minutes because this was impressive. You guys haven't won six goals away from home since 1935 when you beat Aston Villa 7-1. Honestly, I was shocked by like how few of these results you've had. It's actually kind of embarrassing for a team that claims to be as big as Arsenal that you guys haven't beaten, you know, teams like this as often as you probably should have. So go ahead, take your time. Praise
teams
Arsenal.
Like this. All right, hold on. Let me stop you there for a second. West Ham were actually on a 11-game unbeaten streak. It was like I think 8 wins and 3 draws at home in all competitions. So West Ham also are like seventh, I think, in the table. It's not like this is like a crap team who, you know, haven't been doing well at all this season.
Well, they're eighth.
They're eighth now. They were seventh at the time. And they're a team that's, you know, has been on a good run recently, beat us twice at the Emirates this season, drew us last season when we were, you know, I think arguably probably the biggest momentum shifter in our title run last year was that West Ham game, up 2-0. Even probably that one or the Liverpool game, obviously, because we were up 2-0 at Anfield as well and gave up that lead and drew 2-2. Either one of those games. But I think the West Ham one was more infuriating and more, you know, depressing because West Ham did nothing in that game and came back, got a 2-2 draw. And
Saka missed a penalty.
Saka missed a penalty to make it 3-0. Yeah, we were up 2-0. Oh, okay. Yeah, we were up 2-0 20 minutes in.
And they came back.
And had like 5 chances to make it 3-0 and a penalty. And then they got back in the game and we drew 2-2. I mean, it felt like a horrific game, right? So that completely derailed us last season, basically the title push that we before that, you know, I think we'd rattled off like eight or nine straight wins before that. I mean, it was so bad. So this felt so good, Alex. I don't need to talk about the game because it literally was like it was the most one-sided game of football.
You had West Ham fans walking out at halftime.
I've never seen what I saw in that game. Like, I've never seen that in a broadcast game of football where, you know, the game started off normally. The first 30 minutes were them just completely parking the bus, doing pretty well, defending really well. We didn't really get that many chances. We scored off a set piece, and then the floodgates just opened, right? And it came from a mistake, you know, a penalty. You know, it was another set piece. And then suddenly they were 3-0 down. And that was suddenly, and even an extra time, like a second before the whistle was blown, we scored a fourth, which just honestly just completely killed the game, right? And the amount of fans that left the stadium at that point, I've never seen that, dude. I've never seen half of the stadium empty at halftime.
Yeah, it seems like the Europa Conference League trophy that David Moyes won at the end of last season, the shine on that has kind of worn off. Like, yeah, West Ham are doing okay in the league this season, and they have some good results. Those have kind of dried up of late, and it's kind of turned into more draws as opposed to wins, and now this. They're lucky that they're still in the Europa League and straight through the knockout stage of the Europa League. They don't have to do the thing where they play a Champions League team that's dropped down. So that's kind of like David Moyes' lifeline yet again, is like, how well can he do in Europe? But I get it from West Ham fans if they're sick of seeing something like this, because they literally offered nothing that game. I think they had like 0.21 expected goals for the entire game.
But listen, they were getting praised when that was what was happening when they beat us 2-0 at the Emirates a month ago.
They were getting praised. They had two chances. They scored. It doesn't matter.
They literally expected
goals isn't a predictor of goals. It's just
that
a
game
value
was probably
of the
we probably had
chances
more chances in that game and we lost 2-0.
Yeah, maybe, but West Ham didn't score theirs, and you know Areola had a particularly bad day. So it was impressive to see you guys, you know, step on their throats like that. Like you guys have two games where you've had a clean sheet and scored five or more goals in your last, I think, four games. You beat Palace like 5-0 at home.
You also beat Liverpool 3-1.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, specifically like a big margin.
The only
of victory
goal,
kind of
the
game
only
like
goal
this.
We conceded in the
and
last four games.
Well.
The only real goal, because the Liverpool goal was it was an own goal. So the only real goal we've conceded was in a 1-year goal in like the 90th minute when we were up 2-0 cruising the entire game. So defensively, it looks like we're the best team in the league. I mean, we've been unbelievably
well. The big question we had going into like Christmas was like, why have the goals dried up at Arsenal? Now they seem to be like the spout seems to be back on, and you're scoring goals again. And you've got a nice little run of fixtures to take advantage of. So, are Arsenal winning the league, Javier?
No, I think we're going to win our next five games, which will put us on 67 points. But after those five games, I mean, we have such an incredibly hard run of fixtures. So our next five games are away Burnley. I think we win that.
Win.
Home Newcastle. I think we win that. Away
maybe,
Sheffield.
Maybe. It's tough.
No.
I know Newcastle has a lot of injuries, but, you know.
No. We're gonna
they got
run
a draw
over.
Against you guys last year, so at the Emirates. So you never know.
I think we run them over, though. But yeah, win. Sheffield away. Win.
Win.
Brentford at home.
Win.
Chelsea at home.
Win.
Okay, so that's at least five wins, if not four wins, and a draw in our next five games.
Actually, knowing us, it might be another draw.
All right, come on, Alex.
I'm not going to predict that. I'm just saying, like, I can't predict Chelsea right now. We'll get to Chelsea in a bit, but I'm just saying, like,
right,
one of those might be a draw.
But what I wanted to get
you
to after that
to win
is
your next five
then
the
we
league.
Play City on March 31st. That's going to be a huge game at the Etihad. If we can get a draw to that, I'll be ecstatic. I'll say that now. But
it all depends on the situation. If you need to win to like go back ahead of them or something, then you need to win. Like you can't leave it in a situation where City can manage their own destiny. You know, then the City are just going to win.
That's
they're
fair.
Just going to win the league.
That's fair. But then we have.
I agree with you. You should expect to win those next five games. That's not too big of an ask if you're trying to win the title. You should win those games and put yourself in a position.
I think
also,
our form,
we'll get to this in a
our
second
fitness,
as well.
Everything.
There's also
we'll
the
win
Champions
these next
League
five
to contend
games.
With.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be Porto. I'm not particularly worried about.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that soon. But okay. After that, we have City away. We have Luton at home. We should win that. Then Brighton away. That's not an easy game. We talked on the last pod how good Brighton are at home. Then we have Aston Villa at home. Not an easy game. Wolves away. Not an easy game. Tottenham away. Not an easy game. Bournemouth at home.
It always amazes
easy,
me how you managed
away.
To turn a short segment about Arsenal into like almost a full 10 minutes.
No. All
you
right,
get
Alex.
It. You have a good run of fixtures, and then
and
they
then
get a little bit harder as
no,
the season
No, and then
gets
it's incredibly hard at the end of the season. I think we could still choke it.
Yeah, so that's a huge win for Arsenal. Let's move on to probably the marquee game of the weekend. Aston Villa lost 2-1 to Manchester United at Villa Park. It was by far like the best matchup on paper. Two teams trying to get Champions League football next season. Going head-to-head. Villa are now outside of the top four, though it's yet to be seen whether it will be a top four or a top five that will qualify for the Champions League next season. But they're outside the top four with that loss. Rasmus Højlund scored yet again for Manchester United in the 17th minute before Douglas Luiz equalized in the 67th minute. And that big old Scottish noggin, Scott McTominay, came through with the winner yet again, 86th minute.
Scottish Fellaini, baby.
Yeah.
Coming off
Haggis,
the bench
Haggis
with his
Fellaini.
Yeah, Haggis Fellaini coming off the bench, power header into the top corner. I mean, it seems to be like great. So many great football managers, you know, across time have had their plan B to be a big man to come in for the last 15, 20 minutes and just throw some balls into him and see what happens. So it's good for United to have, you know, options across the pitch. I think I remember, you know, them talking about McTominay and Maguire both leaving this summer. And I think both have been like instrumental to kind of stitching this team back together. And I told you they were back, Alex. Are you convinced now?
And my response was, I want to wait and see what happens in this Villa match. And it was kind of a tale of two halves in that, you know, the injury to, was it Shaw at left back, brought on Lindelof, and they kind of struggled with Diaby's pace, with Lindelof having to cover him on United's left side, Villa's right side. But, you know, they got through it. They got through a lot of scares in the process and eventually got the winner. I do just want to say shame on Douglas Luiz for, you know, scoring the equalizer, giving Onana and Varane that little shimmy right after he scored, and then promptly missing a sitter to go up 2-1 a few minutes later. If you're going to go shimmy in the keeper's face like that, you've got to back it up by scoring the winner, like when it's just laid like at your feet, like perfectly like that, and he put it wide. So Villa in a bit of a slump right now, with, you know, they had that vaunted home record that they, what was it, like 14 or 15 games in a row in the league that they'd won, not even a draw in that run of games. You know, ending with beating Manchester City and Arsenal around November of 2023. But, you know, of late, they've been hammered by Newcastle at home. They got hammered by Chelsea in the FA Cup at home, which was, you know, a surprise to all of us, not just Villa fans. And now this, like, yes, it does prove that there is some substance to this resurgence under Ten Hag at Manchester United. But the game was right there for Villa, like, to win, and they just didn't take their chances. They had a lot of pressure. They did played well in the second half, but couldn't pull it off.
As someone who's had Unai Emery as his manager, you know, like, his downsides are his teams can be very erratic. I mean, you get really good runs of form with him, but he's not consistent enough to ever win a league title at any team he's really ever been at. I know I think he won at PSG, but that's a give me. So, like, you know, for Unai, he's a great cup manager. He's great at tactically winning a match or two. He's not going to usually do the double over teams in a season. You might get one emphatic win, and then you might get an emphatic loss in the other game, because that's the type of manager Unai Emery is. And I think his time at a club can only be like 2 to 3 years, because I don't think his tactics and the way that he works well, like, long-term, 5, 6, 7 years. So,
well, what do you think about this theory? I feel like the main reason that they've kind of faltered, especially defensively recently, has been Ezri Konsa's injury. I don't think he had been talked about enough as, like, one of the best defenders, central defenders specifically, in the league this season, up until the injury that's, I think, it happened 2 weeks ago, and he's going to be out for a month, so basically another 2 weeks, maybe a little bit more, but left with him out of the side. I'm not saying that they would have absolutely kept up the form them playing so well in the first half of the season, but they wouldn't have, you know, capitulated like they've done at home.
Also, Boubacar Kamara's red card, so he was out the last three games, so that's been a big factor for them these last three games.
Kamara's
and now he's hurt.
Kamara's been in and out, like, all season, pretty much since he signed, like, the beginning of last season.
He's been a big part of the team, man.
Ezri Konsa's been usually pretty healthy for the most part, so I think him going out of your team and bringing in someone like Clement Longley instead, that's a huge
dip. That's a big
miss. Like, yeah, only one of those players has played for Barcelona, but he wasn't great at Barcelona. There's a reason he's gone on loan to Tottenham and Aston Villa in the last two seasons and barely held down a starting spot at either. It's a big drop-off from someone like Ezri Konsa, and just, like, the assuredness he gives you at the back, not just, like, in his own performances, but how much more calm he keeps the rest of the back line and his midfielders in front of him. I think that they're really missing him. And I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back into the fold and Villa sort of renewed their hopes of trying to get Champions League football. I'm not sitting in the corner as much anymore where I think they're absolutely going to do it. But if they want any hope of doing it, they've got to sort of
figure out the pick at the beginning of the season is starting to pick up some steam now, Alex. I think United could come from behind and snap it up on one of the last days, you know, so we'll see how they do. But I think Tottenham's going to be their biggest contender. But, you know, to talk about United, I do think that, you know, they had a big injury coming into this game. Lisandro Martinez, Varane came in, played 90 minutes, looked good for them.
And Shaw gets injured in mid-game.
Again. Yeah, gets injured in mid-game. They have to bring in, you know, Lindelof, and he plays, you know, okay. But, you know, they get by with that. But Kobbie Mainoo, man, I mean, he's... I think... Not only should United fans be really excited for this guy, but England fans, because I think he's going to be in midfield with Declan
Rice and Jude Bellingham.
That was so filthy. I told you, he has like that Pogba-esque like movement with his feet. Like, I don't know how he does it, but like you saw it there, right? Where I was like, oh my God, like how
that's
like
all decision making.
There's not many players who you even remember in midfield who can do those types of have that type of skill, but also have speed and power and strength. I mean, he's got it all. So he's only 18. You got to think this kid can grow into his body, grow into the game, and you know, at 23, 24, if he continues like this, it's very hard for this for a position for this player who's this good at 18 years old to like he's the real deal. You know what I mean? Like, you see him play every single time he passes the eye test. You know, he looks like he belongs. And, yeah, just so excited. If you're an England fan, I'd be excited for him. You know, Bellingham, Rice, Mainu in midfield. That sounds, I mean, amazing in years to come. You know, all of them are under the age of 25. So.
Well, I was going to say, some that you mentioned about Kobbie Mainoo there. Players at this age, when they're 17 or 18... and they're playing in central midfield, which is, you know, everything's happening around you. You know, you're not in the back line with everything in front of you looking like directly up the pitch, reading the game. You're not a center forward who's, you know, trying to scan behind you to see when the ball's going to be played and, you know, make runs in behind. Everything is going on all around you. And it's in the Premier League with the pace of how fast the ball's zipping around in those games. It's hard for like seasoned veterans to make it happen. For an 18-year-old, like if they're doing as well as someone like Kobbie Mainoo is doing right now, then you're usually putting him in a class with someone like Jude Bellingham when he was 16 or 17 at Birmingham and then going to Borussia Dortmund, or Eduardo Camavinga at 16 playing for Rennes and scoring and assisting against PSG in the French league. The players that do well at that young of an age in midfield usually turn out to be, you know, world-class players. So that's the kind of reasons why people get excited over someone at 16 or 17. I guess he's 18 now, but when he was playing in preseason this season, Mainoo, all the United fans were pointing him out, and then he got injured, and they didn't really get to make his or take his chance in the team because of the injury kept him out for so long. But we're finally starting to see that again now. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. By 22 or 23, people are talking about him. Maybe not to the same level as Jude Bellingham, because he's not the same type of player as Jude Bellingham, but as like a world-class midfielder. So what you're saying is Declan Rice should be worried about his England spot. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. I mean, Kobe's a beast. He's an absolute beast. No, I think they could all play together. I mean, I think that's a dream midfield right there. So, but I mean, you can tell he makes even all the players around him better. Rasmus Højlund scored again, Alex. I mean, it just... The kid keeps scoring. I think it's now six straight games now he's scored. And he's found his confidence. It just all of United seems to be clicking now. Bruno Fernandes looks to be playing better. That ball from Dalot for the goal.
Got Luton next weekend. I think it's at Luton, which hasn't always been easy for the top teams to go there. But Luton just lost at home to Sheffield United, who hadn't won an away game all season. So... I'm sure Manchester United will go there and do fine as well. Is there any other Premier League results you want to mention? I guess Tottenham Brighton we have to mention. That's like two top half teams. Did you get a chance to watch that one?
No, I didn't watch that one, but I was watching like the goal rush, so it wasn't on that game. It was the City game. Or sorry,
I had that on my like second screen. I had the the Liverpool Burnley goal rush game on the TV, and then Tottenham Brighton on my laptop, just sort of off to the side. And kind of similar to that Chelsea Palace game, it was like very much a tale of two halves. But it just seems like it's like the next step in Tottenham's progression of getting these players like Son back. Obviously, he came back after Korea got knocked out of the Asian Cup. He only was able to come off the bench, but he did set up Brendan Johnson's winner. It's a tale of two halves in that they went behind and were conceding a lot of chances and, you know, gave away a penalty to trail Brighton pretty early on. And a lot of it was just not really happening for them. And then a little bit of luck from like a bursting run from midfield from Pape Sarr is what like gets them the equalizer. And then they get that extra push by bringing Son on immediately after the equalizer. and just causing even more chaos with like him, Richarlison, Brennan Johnson, all that pace. It was just too much for Brighton to really deal with. So can't say I'm surprised they ended up beating Brighton. They're developing that, like, dare I say, that Fergie time kind of approach to the end of games now, especially at home, where it doesn't matter who they're playing against, especially when it's like mid-table and lower teams. If it's like a close game at home,
they're gonna throw all really guns forward. Much, yeah,
they throw everyone forward and they just play the numbers game,
right?
And you know, get men in the box and bet on themselves, and it's worked out a bunch of times this season. Like, it was. Do you remember that Sheffield game earlier this season where I think Gustavo Hammer scored with like maybe 10 or 15 minutes left, and Tottenham hadn't done anything for the entire game? And then they scored two goals in like injury time, and it was like one of those early games where we saw like 10 to 12 minutes of injury time for the first time, and Tottenham took advantage of that to win. This was kind of like that. Brighton are obviously a way better team than that, but it still came as like somewhat of a surprise when Tottenham just burst into life with, you know, 15 to 20 minutes left.
Yeah, whenever you see goals like this, the 90 plus 7 goals, you know, that are winners, these are the type of games that last season would have been a draw, you know, that time wasting may have worked for a team like Brighton, you know, at home, away from home to a team like Tottenham. But now, you know, teams at home especially get that big advantage of 6, 7, 8 minutes of extra time. And if you throw everybody forward and you're the home team who's been having possession the whole game and the other team's just been kind of hanging on, you're going to get goals a lot more, which, you know, is kind of an advantage for teams with depth and that play more attacking style. So Tottenham definitely have the right idea of the type of style you need to be playing to be successful in the Premier League. It's just they have to fix defensively, you know, their back line is definitely not there yet. But yeah, I think
Vendeven had a nightmare. After, you know, being so good first half of the season, he like gave the ball away for like the build up to one of Brighton's really good chances, and then he gave the penalty away by, you know, fouling Danny Welbeck. But I'm sure it was just one bad game. He'll probably bounce back. We do want to talk about the Champions League fixtures that's coming back this week. We haven't done this in a minute because, you know, in past seasons, of course, when Chelsea were in it, you know, Javier didn't think Champions League was important. We didn't really need to cover it. But of course, now that Arsenal are back in the Champions League, we're going to talk Champions League again. We have about 5 to 10 minutes to do these previews. We're not going to, you know, go in depth on all of them, obviously. But, you know, as we're going through these and giving our picks, just shout out when you want to talk about one. For example, Copenhagen, Manchester City. We both agree that Manchester City are going to win this. We're not going to go in depth on this. But I'll be damned if I don't think this is going to be, like, entertaining. Like, yeah, I think Manchester City are going to blow them out of the water. But after the performances we saw Copenhagen, especially at home, put up against teams like Bayern Munich, Manchester United.
I was about to say, the first game that we have on Tuesday, tomorrow,
it's at Copenhagen.
Be entertaining. Yeah.
But, like, I still think City will probably win it, like, 4-2, maybe 4-1, something like that. But it'll be end-to-end. Copenhagen will create their chances and, you know, De Bruyne and Haaland will, you know, tear them to shreds on the counter at the other end. It'll be exciting is what I'm trying to say. But City will obviously win. And I can see here from our notes that you're picking City as well. So unless you have anything to add to that one, let's move on to the other game that's going to be kicking off Tuesday, February 13th. Real Madrid at RB Leipzig. Actually, an interesting one that I think on paper, like compared to all these other games, most of them are, you know, kind of easy to predict. This one seems like it could be more interesting, but the only thing that's making me just like 100% stand behind Real Madrid is the fact that Leipzig have been playing all the other teams around them in the sort of battle for Champions League places in the Bundesliga. In the last like month or so, since the Bundesliga returned, they've played a lot of these teams like Stuttgart and Dortmund and Augsburg.
And they've gotten spanked.
And they lose. Yeah, they lose whenever they're playing against teams at the same level as them. And Real Madrid are better than that. So even with Bellingham going down injured against Girona over the weekend, I don't think it's going to be much of a problem. Someone like Brahim Diaz will come in for Real Madrid and probably still play well. And Vinicius and Rodrigo will, you know, continue their excellent form. And Real Madrid will win this one. And I think we both agree on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are some players to watch on Leipzig. I think, you know, Luis Openda has been one of the...
Openda.
Openda, yeah. Openda has been one of the you know, best strikers in the Bundesliga this season, the top goal scorer. So watch him. He's been, I think they just signed him for big money in the summer. Then also
Xavi Simons, from who's on loan weirdly from PSG. You think PSG could have kept him around, but no, he's on loan this year at Leipzig. That's a nice little front two, at least. And they've got plenty of other Champions League experience players.
Also, that Benjamin Sesko kid also really stands out when you watch him play. He's really, really easy on the eye, really good on the ball. I'm sure you'll notice him. He's 6'4". He's a big guy.
Yeah, but he's pacey.
And he's really, really skilled, pacey. You know, he was on RB Salzburg. He was about to say he's doing that pipeline thing, and I'm sure he's going to get a big move in a couple of years here to, like, you know, a Real Madrid or a United.
He got linked with Chelsea
last
summer.
It's about to say, so, you know, he's a really, really good player as well. So there's a lot of fun talent on Leipzig, even at Xavi Simons. Yeah, there's a bunch of really fun players to watch, and I think this will be a good tie. I don't think it'll be, you know, completely one-sided. I think Leipzig will get a few goals, and, you know, we'll give Madrid some scares.
So we both have Real Madrid going through, all pretty much chalk so far. Moving on to Wednesday, Lazio will host Bayern Munich, who are fresh off a ass beating from league leaders Bayer Leverkusen over the weekend that has pretty much sealed is it fair to say the Bundesliga is probably over? Xabi Alonso is going to get the Bayern Munich hegemony.
The momentum here is pretty undeniable. I'm glad Bayer Leverkusen aren't in the Champions League this year.
I still don't see Lazio doing anything. They're like mid-table in Serie A. It's clear that they've been another Serie A team that's like managed to
kind of
fall
imploded
apart
and
after doing
well
last year.
Imploded and Sarri seems to be on the edge there. You know, he might be out of a job soon. So I think this is the only thing that's keeping him is this tie in the job. And I think Bayern Munich kind of needed this because Tuchel is also not having a good time and people are calling for maybe Tuchel's head. So I think he's going
to
need an
come
emphatic
back to
win
Chelsea.
In this.
Come back to Chelsea.
Right?
Please.
You guys would love that. I think Bayern don't like him. And he kind of talks shit a lot about the German media too and about Germany and German football. And I kind of get the feeling he doesn't like it there and it's not going to last that much longer. But I do think that Bayern get through here. And I think
that
this is going to, you know, be the thing that keeps him in a job at least to the end of the season.
Yeah, so we both have Bayern going through against Lazio. Even despite they've got a lot of injuries as well, Bayern do, with like Coman, Gnabry, Alphonso Davies all out. They tried out that new signing, Sacha Boey, at left back, even though he usually plays right back, and it didn't work against Leverkusen, but still think they're going to edge it over Lazio. The final game on Wednesday, or the final game of this week, will be PSG hosting Real Sociedad. Sociedad actually, I think, ended up being group winners in that group with Inter, so they get the home leg second, and the first leg will be at PSG. We both have Paris going through here, and I was tempted by Sociedad, but they've got a few too many injuries as well, where I think if they were in the same sort of form that they were showing in the first half of the season, I'd be more willing to predict them to win, but I think PSG have like a dominant victory in the first game, maybe like 4-1 or something, with Mbappe running riot, and then Sociedad make somewhat of a comeback in the second leg, but it's not going to be enough. So PSG progress. And honestly, PSG should be absolutely ecstatic that they didn't get like another giant in the first knockout round. Like they seem to get like Real Madrid or Bayern Munich in like the first knockout round for like each of the last like two or three seasons. So they finally get one that isn't quite as daunting. So we both have them going through.
But yeah, I mean, I think PSG are really exciting in the Champions League this season because, you know, this is a completely different look team than what we've seen in the last few years for PSG. You know, this isn't a team with Neymar or Messi anymore. It's really just, you know, it's now Gonzalo Ramos, you know, starts up top for them. You know, Mbappe gets to play on his, you know, favored wing. They can play Kolo Muani on either side, or he can come off the bench. Ousmane Dembele, same thing. He can play anywhere, you know, across that front line. He can come off the bench or start for them. And then I think the biggest addition to this team that's changed, actually two of them, Manuel Ugarte, who I wanted Arsenal to sign in the summer. He was on Lisbon last year, and you know, he was on that Lisbon team that you know, knocked us out in Europa League, and he was, I think, by far their best player in that tie. And I remember thinking, you know, he's going to be a world-class player and going to be picked up by somebody, and lo and behold, you know, he's been amazing for PSG this season. You know, the PSG fans talk really, really well of him.
He holds their midfield together. He is their entire midfield, along with Warren Zaire-Emery, who's probably like in the same sort of category as Kobbie Mainoo in terms of young midfield players.
Right, just an incredible talent. And then Marco Asensio, Alex. They picked him up from Real Madrid. He's been getting a lot of game time. You know, he's kind of found his place in that midfield as well. And he's not a player who's just like done with his career. He's only 28 years old. You know, for a player who's like an attacking midfielder, you know, didn't necessarily ever rely on his pace. You know, it's always been his skill and his finesse. You got to think that this guy can still add a lot and you know, could do well at PSG. So I think he's just recently started getting into the team. And PSG's kind of developed into, you know, not just the team that is just Mbappe. You know, they've got threats now in other places. They've got, you know, good team play. They're good defensively. You know, yeah. So just PSG are, I think, a team to watch. You know, they're not a team full of divas anymore. And
well, one
they've
big
unified
diva,
under but... one religion, the Mbappe. Yes.
Yeah, so we both have PSG going through, and now we finally come to one where we disagree. Inter Milan versus Atletico Madrid, the first leg of that will be next week, Tuesday, February 20th, and that will be at Inter Milan in the first leg. Javier, I see here in your notes that you have Inter going through. I'm going to go with Atletico. I think Atletico, especially in the Champions League, they've kind of rediscovered their Champions League pedigree. There was a good like 3 or 4 years there where if they did get out of their group, it was a struggle, and then they would immediately lose in the first knockout round. I'll admit a lot of this hinges on how bad that Alvaro Morata injury was last weekend. If he's, you know, out for both legs of this, then I'll agree with you. Inter are going through because Thuram and Lautaro Martinez are just... Hakan Çalhanoğlu as well is scoring goals like crazy in Serie A. They've got a lot of firepower, and obviously the pedigree they showed last year getting to the final. But... if Morata's fit, you've got him and Griezmann who can match Lautaro and Marcus Thuram in terms of like firepower up top. They're both having very good seasons, and they've kind of rediscovered their attacking verve with some of these young players that have come into the squad. So I'm gonna stick with Atletico Madrid in this one.
Alex, the only reason I say Inter is because you look at Serie A here and. You know, Inter are pretty much going to be runaway title winners, I think. They've outdone Massimo Allegri, who has had a great season with Juventus this year, by all accounts, especially defensively, only conceded 15 goals in 24 games. Inter have conceded 12 goals in 23 games. So, I mean, they also have the team that have scored by far the most in Serie A, 55. The next team, closest team, is 47, AC Milan.
Yeah, so, Inter are winning Serie A this year. That's
so
they're running
away
with
it. I mean, I think Inter are, I think, by far the best team in Italy, and I think that they you know, beat the, I think, Athletic are probably the fourth best team in Spain. So I do think that hierarchy will prevail in this, and I kind of see Inter's defensively being able to outwit Simeone at his own game. I don't think Simeone is at the height of his powers anymore, Atletico, and
okay.
I think Inter are kind of at their peak right now, where in terms of at least in this century.
I'm not as bullish on this one. So like I said, if Morata's out, I'm willing to concede. It's like a toss-up, and I don't think you're wrong to pick Inter. The one that I'm bullish about that I can't believe you're picking is this next one, PSV Eindhoven versus Borussia Dortmund. You did this in the group stage when Dortmund were in the group of death with Newcastle and AC Milan and PSG. You picked Dortmund to finish bottom of that group, and they finished top. So I need you to put a little bit of respect on Dortmund's name. They have the Champions League pedigree here. PSV got out of a shit group where Arsenal beat the shit out of everyone. And, you know, it was between them, a garbage Sevilla team, and a team in Lens that hadn't been in the Champions League for 20 years. They're like one of the examples of why the Champions League has gone downhill of recent years and why it's being reshaped after this year. Like the fact that PSV Eindhoven are in the knockout stages says it all. I think they're going to get absolutely dominated by Dortmund, and it's not going to be a question.
All right, Alex. I don't agree with that at all. I just don't see what's really that good about this Dortmund team. I think they have a couple of talents in there, but I think they play in a farmer league.
The Bundesliga is a farmer's league, Emre Can, what is the
Eredivisie? Emre Can and 34 or 35-year-old Marco Reus, you know, can still start in this team and look good. And Niklas Füllkrug, Alex, is still a good striker for them. Yeah, Donnell Malin,
Sebastian Haller just scored the winner in the AFCON final. He's going to be back. They've got some striking options. Jadon Sancho,
right. Trash. Just absolute garbage.
Only in the Premier League. He's good in Champions League and in the Champions League,
Alex. No, I like PSV, Alex, because of how well they've been doing domestically, because of how well they played in that away game against Arsenal.
This isn't domestic.
Because of how they played against us in the away game.
Okay.
I think that they're a really, really good team.
The game that didn't matter to you guys at all? That game?
No, it still showed that they're you know, a really high-level team. So.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Porto, Arsenal, we both have Arsenal. If this had been a couple of years ago, I would have given Porto a chance, but they don't have the quality of players anymore. I think it might be a little frustrating for Arsenal initially, but in the home leg, the second leg, you guys are going to absolutely wipe the floor with them. So I'm picking
Arsenal. Their whole tie hinges on the first leg. If they can somehow get a win,
they have to win the first
draw,
leg. They can't draw the first leg. They cannot
but
draw
if they,
it.
If
at
they
all.
Can somehow, like, yeah, they
and Barcelona
they,
beat
on
them
that.
in the group stage in Porto.
And
so you guys are going
to
destroy
them. I was about to say, most teams have the most difficulty against us the first time they play against us. Doesn't matter if it's really home or away. So. This is a different animal, this Arsenal team, than what we've been in previous seasons. And I think we're, you know, unlike other cup competitions so far this year, we're going to pick our full team. And I think we don't have enough injuries, you know, knock on wood, that nothing happens. But yeah, I think this should be pretty cut and dry. I'll say we draw the first.
You're not drawing the first leg. You're going to beat them like 2 or 3-1 in the first leg. I think.
I hope so.
Napoli Barcelona is the final of these round of 16 fixtures. Kind of a sexier one on paper than it actually is in practice. It's like
I was about to say it looked so nice on paper from last season.
But
if
now
you
Napoli
think
are in
about
like ninth.
Xavi the champions versus Napoli the champions.
Right
now it's like, all right, both are in the pits.
Right,
that Xavi imploded and said he was leaving Barcelona
like
at the end of the season.
Like fired their new manager like not even halfway through the season in Napoli versus a team that's going to, you know, their manager is a lame duck and Xavi's announced he's leaving.
So was Osimhen. Osimhen's like been just shopping around publicly, like that he's leaving in the summer.
Yeah.
The president's talked about how he's leaving. I mean, it just doesn't feel like both of these teams have their season.
They don't have the juice.
Hinges on. Yeah, they don't. But they're not going to have the juice. Neither one of these teams are going to win the Champions League. So whoever comes out of this, I think it's going to be a slog. I think it'll be a fun one, but you know, I think neither one of these teams are going to be, you know, coming out of this game thinking I'm going to win the Champions League because of my performance in this. So yeah, I have Barcelona going through purely because they have so many, you know, young, exciting talents. And I think the Champions League is a great place for players like that to perform. So I kind of think that they might just show up on the day and get a weird win. You know, maybe when they haven't played that well or Napoli have missed a bunch of chances. So yeah, that's why I've got Barcelona going through, but I'm not like confident in them. I won't fight you on that one. Why do you have Napoli, Alex?
I have Napoli because Victor Osimhen is going to take out his African Cup of Nations frustrations after losing in the final to Ivory Coast on Sunday. He's going to take out those frustrations on everyone who's in front of him for the rest of the season and get his big move. Like his release clause is 150 million or something like that. That's only going to happen. He's only going to get that move if he shows that he's still the, you know, the godly striker that he was when they won the league last season. And he's been good so far this season, obviously gone for the last month on international duty. But he's going to want to end the season like with a bit of a cup run here in the Champions League to, you know, give teams that extra reassurance that they can and should spend 150 million to bring him in. So also, Kvicha Kvaratskhelia still plays for Napoli, and, you know, I also don't trust Barcelona. They just drew 3-3 with Granada, who were like second bottom in La Liga. Like, they're starting a 17-year-old in their back line and playing Andreas Christensen in midfield. Like, I don't trust them. I really don't. So, all right, well, we got through it all. Looking forward to the Champions League returning. Good luck to Arsenal. Hopefully too many of your players don't get injured, and hopefully you don't get knocked out by another Portuguese team in the round of 16 again for a second year in a row.
All I ask, Alex, is the next round, we get through this round, and we play either Bayern Munich or Barcelona. I don't care which one.
That's why you pick those teams. You just want to play them, and now that
absolutely.
You guys are,
I have,
you know,
beef
better
to
than
pick,
them.
Yeah. Yeah. I have beef to pick with both. Honestly, I prefer Bayern because of the 10-2. We need to wipe the 10-2 away from Champions League history by rewriting it with our next Champions League tie together and just, you know, writing all the wrongs that happened in that game. So, you know, that would be really nice. And all the shit Barcelona did to us as well in the early, you know, 2010s, poaching Fabregas and Song and Vermaelen and just fuck them, Kleb.
All right, if you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can do so at JavierRev9. If you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMAS92, and if you want to follow the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod. Enjoy the return of Champions League games and Premier League games next weekend, and until next time, see you.